Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief somewhere in the beautiful state of Colorado. Thank you, Chief, for being on the show. Also, Dr. Travis Yates, retired Tulsa Police Department major. Yes. Can you believe that? That's a big guy and a big major for that department, man. Tulsa, TPD, the same abbreviation for my agency. You always confuse me when we're hanging out. You're talking about TPD, Travis. So thanks for being on the show, guys. A shout out to our sponsors. And guys, please support our sponsors. They go the great lengths to bring this good quality content to you. We have our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com. Also, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. That's ComplianTechnologies.com. We have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're streaming to over 1 million followers right now on social media during the live show. And hey, if you have any retention issues, or you have any issues with trying to get candidates, I'm talking about a pool of candidates, recruits for your police agency, whether police, sheriff, or federal, guys, safeguardrecruiting.com. Travis can tell you more about them, but they are an excellent outfit and they're doing it the right way. You don't need to be paying all these incentives to get the wrong guy. And then we got twobellas.com. They built a new online store at leoroundtable.com. So if you want cool gear like the mug behind me, they've actually got a new and improved mug that is in production right now. And the shirt that I'm wearing, go to our Leo Roundtable website, go to the online store that was built by Two Bellas and check out the gear. We don't make a dime off of anything. We keep the prices low so that you guys will get our gear and get our name out there. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying the content, Brian. Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and our very own Travis Yates with lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And guys, here's what we're going to be talking about. I did throw in a new article that I was privy to last night. Newsbreak.com, we've got a federal judge blocking a California law that's forcing ICE agents to remove masks during the operations. You know, originally they came out with this, Gavin Newsom signed in the law, and now we got LAPD police chief and the Los Angeles County Sheriff saying, hey, we're not going to enforce this thing. And so Newsom said, that's fine. We'll go and we'll enforce it civilly and be charging $10,000 fines, start at $10,000 for each violation, encouraging civilians in the state of California to continue to film and take pictures of cops and stuff, and especially the feds, ICE, so they can, you know, make them pay the civil. And now we got a judge stepping in, and I it's a federal judge stepping in. So I don't know if I should assume, maybe Travis or Dr. Schultz would know whether this would prevent them from going after the guy civilly, but we'll talk about that in just a second. Some of the other stuff on the agenda, we've got authorities uncover illicit biolab operating in the United States. Guess where? Las Vegas. That's right. Owned by who? Chinese nationals. Wow. You can't make that up. Suspect dead after he shot at a Baltimore police officer during a fight. And then we got body cam. It shows events leading up to a fatal shooting of a guy, Christopher Taylor. He's reinstated as a police officer. Tashawn Rogers fired a shot at a plainclothes officers before being fatally shot by other officers. And then we got video shows of a fallen officer fatally shooting a knife-wielding suspect after two people are stabbed. They survived, though. So, wow, just a lot of stuff going on. So let's start off with this Newsbreak article. Federal judge blocks California law forcing ICE agents to remove masks during operations. You know, this is the third time we covered this, and the news on this keeps changing. You know, Gavin Newsom thought he'd get cute. Let's make this very clear. This is totally against the feds and against ICE officers and Border Patrol. But it, even though it's written for law enforcement to not be able to wear masks and stuff, that's what he's doing. But if anyone saw Gavin Newsom go up against our own Governor Ron DeSantis, you know, in that debate, and where when his lips are moving, Gavin Newsom's lying. I mean, you know, the sky is green. I'm going to convince you at it. It's amazing. Even with this huge loss, he takes it as a win, which is not a surprise because it's Gavin Newsom, but you'll see what I'm talking about in a second. A Los Angeles-based federal judge on Monday blocked California from enforcing its law that would require ICE agents to remove masks during immigration enforcement operations. Now, the judge, surprisingly, is a Clinton appointee, Judge Christina Snyder. She granted a preliminary injunction against the No Secret Police Act, arguing that it discriminated against the federal government by violating the Supremacy Clause. Now, you know, you only do these preliminary injunctions if that side is likely to win. So I know that's what she believes and why she did it. Under the Constitutional Clause of Supremacy Clause, federal law. It takes precedence over any conflicting state or lower law, you know, or local law, which is, of course, lower laws, rendering the lower level law unenforceable. Now, Snyder, the judge, said that the no secret police ruling, it hinged on California exempting its own state officers while penalizing federal officers or federal agents. So, wow, that not too bright there. The court finds that federal officers can perform their federal functions without wearing masks, Judge Snyder said. However, because the No Secret Police Act, as presently enacted, does not apply equally to all law enforcement officers in the state, it unlawfully discriminates against the feds. So Attorney General Pam Bondi, she applauds the ruling in a post on X on Monday, saying that federal agents are being increasingly targeted for doing their jobs, warned the law would have worsened existing safety risks. And here's a quote saying from her post, another key court victory, thanks to our outstanding, the Justice Department attorneys, Bondi said, following our arguments, the district court in California blocked the enforcement of a law that would have banned federal agents from wearing masks to protect their identities. These federal agents are harassed, doxxed, obstructed, and attacked on a regular basis just for doing their jobs. We have no tolerance for it. And that's irrefutable. You can't even argue that she's wrong on that. And it goes on to say, now here's where the Gavin Newsom muddies the water, because he's taking this as a win. Although the ruling blocking the facial covering ban, the court allowed the state's No Vigilantes Act to remain in effect. Now that mandates that officers, it doesn't have anything to do with masks, that they just show their agency affiliation and a personal identifier like a badge number on their uniforms. Big deal. California Gavin Newsom, he called the ruling a win, framing the decision as a victory for his policy goals, despite the court striking down the other measure. And here's a quote saying, a federal court upheld California's law requiring federal agents to identify themselves, a clear win for the rule of law. No badge and no name mean no accountability. And this is what Newsom said. He continued saying, California will keep standing up for civil rights and our democracy. Of course, they didn't say anything about him standing up for, you know, more so for the rights of the illegals and taking the rights away from his citizens by allowing the illegals to be there in a sanctuary state. So commentary on this, gentlemen, I find Gavin Newsom fascinating, that people continue to elect him in office, even though he just has no shame and his lips are moving, he's lying. Travis Yates.
You know, both political parties use emotion as a power weapon, but no one does it better than Newsom's party. It's always about appearances and virtue signaling and pulling on emotions, and very little of it is fact-based. And that's why Newsom is so successful. I mean, this mask thing is ridiculous. Everyone with a brain knows they have to wear masks because they're getting doxxed and death threats. Not one politician is speaking out against that. Can they? And by the way, Newsom knows. They all know. So this is all about feel good and everything else. Anyone that knows anything about the law knows it's a supremacy clause issue. It's not a surprise the judge overruled it. It was all done by Newsom for appearances and for emotions and for whatever side that follows him claps their hands. But they're being played because he's playing them like a fiddle. And while he's doing that, real work's not getting done. But that sort of seems to be the politics of the day.
Chief Schultz. Yeah.
I absolutely agree with Travis on two counts. First of all, it's theater. And secondly, it would never have survived court scrutiny. The ACLU would find a plaintiff to go the civil suit route. But you obviously have the supremacy clause. You've got the rationale for the masks and other uniform requirements. Wiener apparently is going to go back and try to readjust the law to make it palatable, but again, it's just not going to happen. And the idea that a state legislature is going to make a rule that applies only to federal agencies is ridiculous on its face. It's just absolutely unsustainable. But it gets the press going. It makes Newsom look like he's a big advocate for whatever. I'm not sure. The thing is, you know, if you file a civil lawsuit, I don't understand. Maybe if we had an attorney that could explain this, you've got to have some harm that happens. You have to have a tort in order to file a suit. I don't know what a plaintiff could claim that they're being harmed in some substantial way by seeing a cop with a mask on. I just don't see the foundation of it.
$10,000, starting at $10,000, if they were able to pull that off. Could you imagine?
And I'm curious, and Travis may have some input on this, if is it the individual officer's decision to wear a mask, or is that a mandate from somebody else? And I don't know how that would play out in court. I just know that if an agency on the local level, anyway, the ones that I've been involved in, state and local, if you do something that's within policy that's mandated or allowed, there's some kind of protection. And of course, they always want to sue the department because that's where the money is. If it's just your own decision and you've done something discretionary and getting the grease in it, as you would say, the department's going to be like, we don't even know the guy, right? You're going to back off. You're going to have personal liability. So I don't know how that would play in if the mandates are coming from a policy for the masking or whether it's an individual officer's decision.
I mean, Newsom has no issue whatsoever of Antifa wearing masks. Criminals wearing masks. It's just as Dr. Schultz said, it's a bunch of theater kids that get together to make these policy decisions.
Good point. You're right. The other side, the protesters hide their identities. They're smashing windows and stealing items, and they're able to mask up. There's no law that I'm aware of, or at least one that's being enforced, preventing them from doing that, as there would be where I live. So, yeah, interesting stuff. Guys, we are perfect timing. We're coming up on our first commercial break, so we're going to be talking about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. So, guys, commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Gauls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief, and also Dr. Travis Yates, retired police major from Tulsa. During the break, I'll tell you, Dr. Schultz slid it right in the nick of time. He was talking about a comment I made about campus police officers yesterday, and I had cracked a joke about their campus cops because they couldn't get on. I don't think I said the rural police department, but I was implying that they would have gone with a bigger agency first, and they couldn't, so they went with, a smaller agency, and so I was kind of retelling the story about how the campus cop sued the Tallahassee Police Department when one of their canines bit him while he's chasing a bad guy, and I was kind of recounting stories on. At least when I was chasing bad guys, whenever they released the canine and you knew about it, you did not budge. You stood still. You didn't move because that dog's like an unguided missile. It's going to lock on to whatever's moving and just take them out. So, but that is pretty much the luck of the draw, is it not, Chief? You guys go to the best agency, the best pay, the best benefits, and it trickles down from there. So the agencies, like in my neck of the woods, my agency, Tampa, has the pick of the litter. And guys who don't make it into Tampa can't get in. They'll go to the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office. And the guys that can't get into there, they'll go into the other surrounding agencies. And they'll eventually, get to where they're going to the USF Police Department, where I'm with the school, or Camper International Airport. Now, some of the agencies like TIA, the airport, they'll get a lot of the guys that's retired from the other agencies like Tampa. They'll get second careers going there. But that's, is that not the luck? Is
well, That's a common bias that I see within the police community. I've worked for rural agencies, and I was spent over 7 years as a campus police chief, apparently because I couldn't get a job with a real department, Jeff. what I've seen and what I've done, what I've experienced, the training that I see, the competence, the choices that people make about lifestyle and how they want to live and where they want to live and what they want to do for their families. I have not seen a a deficit of competence, or like they're all second string or you know, on the bench or wannabe. So I just have to categorically disagree with your observations and assumptions, because I'm and the same way with rural policing. You know, I've had a lot of competent cops, some of the best cops and best detectives that I've ever worked with or know about. And again, I've done ride-alongs with 50 different agencies, many big ones.
I'm not saying there's not outliers, but
no. You're talking about an outlier. I'm talking about they are cops. They are cops.
I think one of the benefits of a small town agency is your officers oftentimes have a more wide range of experience because they have to do more.
Exactly.
They have to not only take the report, but they have to go and follow up the investigation. They have to interview people. I mean, at a big department, you could just be a report taker. That's all. There's a lot of officers that you just take a report and send it on. So,
but do you not, is there, I mean, it's in my circles, it's fairly well known that, you know, that a lot of agencies, a small agency, suffer from a lack of training and you have to rely, not that it's not, I mean, in some cases you've got a good, strong sheriff's office or another agency that you can partner with for your training and stuff. But there are a lot of smaller agencies out there, and we cover them on the show, where they just don't have.
Yeah,
the training that they it's not the cop's fault, but they just don't have the training.
I would also say it's the opposite. I actually, some of the best trained people I know work at small to mid-sized agencies because they had those opportunities, and you get lost in the shuffle at a big agency. But you're also picking on, I think it's also easy to pick on very small departments when that's 92-93% of all departments, right? So if you find a bad cop somewhere, there's a 90% chance they work at a small department, because that's just what departments are. So I don't know. I think we're talking about stereotypes. I think a cop is a cop, and they're a bad cop, good cop, and they're spread out all over. It just so happens that very few departments are over 50 officers. So when you run into a bad story, they don't tend to work for big departments, because most departments are smaller departments.
And conversely, you know, we see big departments that we review their actions, and we think, well, that was stupid. They should have known better. They were the NYPD or Dallas or, you know, whatever. And I will, here's my tirade about small agencies. I would be very careful about criticizing small agencies unless you have ever responded to a bank robbery as a solo officer, gone to a bar fight as a solo officer, worked your entire career without any air support, have been up to an hour away from a backup, and maybe 3 to 4 hours away from a SWAT team or a bomb squad, because that's the reality of working out there where you're not surrounded by 100 other cops on the shift. So that's you just tripped the trigger there, Chip. I wanted to hold you accountable for it on the air.
You could totally look. I'm man enough to admit you could totally be right, and I could totally be wrong. I'm just going off of my, you know, just my experience. But look, I am isolated in Tampa, Florida, even though I've worked with a lot of feds and stuff. Now, I've never experienced that with the feds, but there are some smaller agencies here. I've worked with some beverage people, some state agent people and stuff, and even with the sheriff's office here. When I worked at the police union, and people, we had these badges we had people coming from different agencies. It was just like, oh my gosh, having the conversation with some of these guys, it was just like really very apparent that there was a difference. But I can't say that is like blanket across America or everywhere, but I just, you know, in my experience, it's shown. But I could totally be wrong. So I and I'm talking, and I have high respect for you, so there's a good chance that you're right and I'm wrong, Chief. So
I just wanted to say that, in case there were any of those campus cops still listening after yesterday, I wanted to let them know that they're good.
All right. If I offended anybody, sorry. Except for the chief, I don't mind if I offend him. But I could be wrong on that. A lot of factors go into play when you're going for agencies. And I'll tell you what, you bring up a good point. If Milwaukee was the best paying agency with the best benefits on the planet, I would not want to work for Milwaukee. I'm sorry, Minneapolis. I tell you, that almost goes without saying. Now, Chief succeeded in taking up airtime for the next segment.
Yes, I did.
We got to go to another commercial break. So guys, it's going to get real good. We got some great stuff coming up. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Commercial break. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our satellite sponsor, Comply Technologies at complytechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-ethics manner, utilizing what they're called their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. And Travis Yates knows exactly what I'm talking about. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's helped officers not only tens of thousands of times, but they've had over 250,000 deployments with no injuries and no deaths. You heard that correctly. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplyTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Comply Technologies and their revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions has ever come along. Go to ComplyTechnologies.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable. LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Travis Yates, retired police major from the Tulsa Police Department, and Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. And I was, you know, I just got publicly spanked by Dr. Schultz, you know, and then I'm reading Spook Dog on, looks like he's on YouTube. Campus comps in my area used to be students taking criminology classes. That doesn't necessarily mean anything bad because I was a criminology student at one point too. And then we got Rocky Allen saying, I was bit by the dogs at least six times. All my fault. I didn't follow the handler's instruction. And I bet Rocky on Facebook, I bet you didn't sue the agency either, did you? Anyhow, but thanks guys. So if you guys missed the public smackdown that I just went through from Dr. Schultz, you have to replay it on on YouTube or on Rumble in order to witness it. Maybe our hits will go up. So it was brutal. So if you guys are ready, let's move on to a story. I think we've got an update article here, and it is the LibertyDaily.com. Authorities uncover illicit biolab operating in Las Vegas home owned by Chinese nationals. So, you know, when I first read the article, I had to go through quickly and see, make sure it wasn't Randy Sutton's home or Jamie Borden's home. But after I cleared the air there, I went back and I read the article because I knew it was safe and we could cover it on the show. And so a federal investigation has been launched after discovery of an illicit biolab operating in a Las Vegas home. And they said that they found files labeled HIV, malaria, TB, COVID-19 and Ebola and more. Now they did a Fox News reporter said the lab allegedly is tied to China. The story doesn't make the story any better. SWAT officers served a search warrant Saturday at a residence on the city's east side after receiving a tip that a biolab was operating inside the home, according to the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, where, of course, Lieutenant Rainey Sutton retired from. A row of refrigerators was found, all containing vials of unknown liquids, but with horrifying labels. Police said the evidence, including biological samples that they were sent for testing. Investigators protected themselves with hazmat suits, thank God. The owner of the home was identified. His last name is Zoo. They said that he was a Chinese national in the title. He's already in federal custody following discovery of an unauthorized biolab in Reedley, California back in 2023. If that gives you any clue about this guy's background, he was accused in that case of making and distributing misbranded medical devices such as tests for COVID-19 and more. His trial, he hasn't even been the trial yet. That's going to happen in April. And then Sheriff Kevin McMahill, he said that in the Las Vegas home, there were more than 1,000 pieces of evidence involving potential biological and hazardous materials. How would you like to get that call and have to go out there for that one?
Well, I'm just waiting for the left to come to the defense of Chinese communists because that's, you know, that's typically their response to a law enforcement crackdown. I think the whole, and Travis had his mic open before I did, so I'll yield to him pretty quickly. But this whole, you know, we could be very paranoid and conspiracy absorbed with this Chinese stuff. I mean, they're taking over agriculture, they're buying land, they're getting stuff near military bases. They're involved in the Venezuela situation that the Trump administration has addressed, and even encroaching on influence in Greenland, which has defensive
law.
And so it's It's a real scary thing that that there's so much Chinese influence, and it's interesting to me that it's a local agency that peeled this back. And of course, the feds are in it now, and we're still in a terrorism fight. We're still worried about nuclear issues. We're worried about the grid, the power grid. We're worried about biological assaults. And when we have all these preparations in place, whether it's for, an ultimate destruction or targeted attacks, it just scares the bejeebers out of me. I don't have an answer for it. Don't have a solution for it. But I'm glad that's being peeled back. And it's kind of like the old, if you find one, look for another. You know, when you're searching somebody and you find a gun, you don't stop. There's probably another gun somewhere, or might be another weapon. So we can't stop and say, oh, well, I'm glad we put a cap on this thing in Las Vegas, because how many other places are happening? And how are they going to be exposed? They're going to be exposed like so many major criminal investigations. Some patrol officer or confidential informant or detective is going to be the first one to spot this. So we all need to remain vigilant.
I was just going to say the same thing. Like, this is in a home in Vegas. What's going on in the desert? I mean, where else is this stuff happening? I'm trying to wrap my head around the seriousness of this, and it's not even in the news anymore. It's like this dude's rolling around with all these biohazards. I mean, honestly, the COVID-19 vial doesn't bother me too much, but those other ones seem to bother me. I'm sure if there's a liberal listening, they're freaking out about that COVID-19 vial, they're going to get their boosters. But I'm just trying to, what I haven't heard is what the motive was and what the intent was and what is going on, right? But, you know, that, and we announced that JFK was killed by our own government and that the aliens exist, it's out of the news the next day. So it's really a weird time in America. This, to me, should be major news all over the place. That, and of course, ransom letters. So, yeah, pretty odd.
I was impressed the sheriff's office had biohazard suits.
Well, I'm surprised Newsom hasn't made a law against that, right? I mean, they're covering up to protect themselves. So that's really surprising.
Yeah, but I mean, actually, this is where having the right equipment. I mean, I used to have a I'm a big fan of go bags, but we had one. I had my gas mask, my bio suit in my trunk, and I'm just glad to hear that they're still equipping guys with that kind of stuff, because you know they would have had to call some three-letter agency to come take over before they went in.
You know, there was a lot of that stuff that was distributed post 9/11, and I always said during the years of my police work. You know, in the 80s, if you wanted money, it had to be for drugs. If in the 90s, it had to be for community policing. In the 2000s, it was for terrorism. You always wanted the same thing. I want equipment, manpower, cars, and guns. So I just wonder if they're looking back into the 10-year-old stock of hazmat suits that they got from federal grants. But these things are, they're essential. Now, again, talking about rural law enforcement agencies. We can have central, not every little department has to have a whole bunch of hazmat suits, but we would have regional things that were funded through 9/11 funds. So you'd have a hazmat unit maybe for several counties, that would come together. But, when people look at that before something happens, oh, why do you need that? Why do you need that armored vehicle? Why do you need those suits? Why do you need those, rifles? You don't need them until you need them.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I totally agree. Well, guys, if you're ready, I think we've got a story with a video component that's coming up next. So this next one, Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. Suspect dead after he shot at a Baltimore police officer during a fight, during a struggle.
Hey, get his hands. I got his hands. Listen to me. Oh, shots fired. Shots fired.
So we're in Baltimore, Maryland. This Baltimore officer narrowly escaped a bullet in what later turned out to be a fatal police shooting. Totally agree. The agency publicly released the video on Thursday afternoon. It shows the intense moments that happened on January the 20th. So this just happened, and of a late night shooting that happened near Anchor Square Shopping Center, that is in Southeast Baltimore. Now, police said the timeline is started a block away. There was a fight at somebody's house. This guy named Jamari Muse, 40 years old, or bad guy. He pulled the gun out before he leaves on a bicycle. So that was the block away. And those involved in this fight, they called 911. And officer sees Muse, or bad guy, nearby. And video released on Thursday shows the officer, he tackles this dude off the bicycle and they get on the ground and then more officers arrive. Now, when you're watching the body cam, we've got an officer, our officer wearing the body cam is running up, bad guy's on the ground, and we've already got two other officers fighting with him. Bad guy appears to be on his back and these guys are on top of him. So our officer is our third officer that's arriving there. But this is right when it goes bad. So this third officer gets there, and as they're trying to get this guy to put his hands behind his back, it's in that struggle that when all of a sudden he starts turning around his body position, he produces a revolver and he fires it and shocks everybody. And you can see the blast. And then multiple officers return fire. And the bad gun, it wasn't just a bad gun. I know people saying a revolver, what, it's probably a 38. This was a 357 revolver. He only pulled the trigger one time, but it's a 357 Taurus. And assuming that he was shooting a 357 Magnum out of that instead of like a 38, because it'll shoot both, that's a wicked round that you don't want to be hit. You don't want to be hit with any round, but especially like a 357 or 44. Police said the two officers, they each fired six shots, hit the bad guy who died at the scene. Thank God no officers were injured in the shooting. Extremely close call. Commentary on this, gentleman? Any flashbacks, Travis, from what happened in Tulsa with you? Or?
Well, it goes to show you that I don't even know if the third officer was aware that this guy was suspected of having a gun. And in the details, it said that he was suspected of assaulting someone with a gun before they got him on the ground. And so this third officer runs up there. But boy, I tell you what, there didn't seem to be a whole lot of urgency when this guy supposedly had a gun and he's fighting him. I mean, there ought to be some Hulk Hogan, WWE, something going on to get this guy to comply quickly, because the urgency didn't seem to be there before that shot went off.
Commercial break, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys. It's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns and we deal with ammo every day. But it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got a deal for you if you have your own agency. If you're a chief or a sheriff, you can host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief, and also Dr. Travis Chase, retired police major from Tulsa. We've been talking about a use of force. We have a bad guy that flees a fight on a bicycle after he produces a gun. We have a cop tackling him, and now we got our third cop arriving on the scene. They're trying to get his hands behind his back, and he produces a gun, a 357 Taurus revolver, fires one shot, and the officers light him up. I think they each fired like six rounds, and the bad guy dies. I know that I think Travis was commenting before the break. Chief Schultz, I believe you're up.
Yeah, just wanted to say a couple things. The application of a glove could have put an end to that on first contact.
Good point.
Just as an aside. And secondly, I have never had to engage in a tactical reload after I just killed somebody. So I don't want to be too critical of the officer, but just for officers and training officers, you need to be able to do a tactical reload without putting eyes on your weapon. And I don't say that as a big critique, just kind of a training issue, because the officer had a little bit of a hard time. At least they realized, and I've seen some of the videos, haven't had a chance to comment on them. Sometimes they'll empty a mag and the slides back, and they don't, they've still got their weapon on the bad guy because they don't know that they're out of ammo. So, you know, happy ending on this one. They finally got around to it. I agree with Travis. They were probably far too. I mean, they drove fast with lots of sirens in the background. That was part of the exciting part of the video. But I would say it's just interesting when you when the getaway vehicle's a bicycle. I don't know. It just tells you something about the offender. I'm not sure what.
A bicycle, a Taurus, and a cricket phone.
Yeah, there you go. That's the triad.
Hey, did either of you guys ever carry a Taurus?
No, I'm a man, Chip. I'm a man.
I've owned them. I never carried them as a duty weapon.
Okay, yeah, I until recently was carrying a Taurus Slim, and it is a compact. Now they have micro compacts, right, which are even smaller. But it's a slim, so it's a small profile you can carry in your pocket. Here in Florida, we wear shorts everywhere, so you can literally have it in your shorts pocket. Nobody would be the wiser. And a buddy of mine's got it now. I'm going to probably be selling it to him. But they make a good gun. I tell you, it had a Glock trigger, which is a little unusual. So I'm a big fan of Glock triggers. Because you get that short reset, you know. So anyhow, I just thought I'd give Taurus a little plug. I do like the Taurus.
Well, I will confess that I carried a Raven 25.
Oh, don't say. Did you really?
As a backup gun, yeah.
Was it one of the gold plated Ravens?
it was black. Now mine had an unusual striation on it because I just carried it on the inside pocket of my Tuffy Jack. And about the third time it fell out during a fight, I said, you know, this could possibly do more harm than good. So I retired it.
Raven. Wow. We used to fight all kinds of stuff on bad guys. Wow. All right, guys. So we got 6 minutes. I think we got time for another story with a video component. So this next one, rumble.com. This is Butter, still the channel. Body cam footage shows events that leading up to a fatal shooting of a man.
Show me the fucking ass. Stop it.
So Springfield, Vermont. So the Vermont Attorney General Charity Clark has declined. I hate it when they start them off like they've declined to prosecute the Springfield police officer named Vincent Franchi and also a Windsor County deputy, Brian Jalava, after they shot and killed James Crary while responding to a call for an alleged assault, robbery, and a kidnapping. So the call seems like it was a pretty substantial assault, robbery, and kidnapping. But we have a Springfield police officer and a Windsor County deputy that are responding to the same call. So I do like to see that because you don't see that every day, you know, two different agencies responding. The footage released shows the perspective of the officer, Franchi, and also Deputy Jalava. They're trying to arrest this bad guy, Crary, during their investigation. Now, Crary, or bad guy, he's leaving the home and he does not stop his vehicle. He puts the officers at risk for serious injury. Wait till you hear what he's doing in the car. But this is all determined by the AG Clark's office. So the Clark, the attorney general, said the body cam footage shows the officer and the deputy. They're trying to stop this white vehicle that the bad guy's in. And he starts the car. He drives forward away from them, goes in the opposite direction. But then all of a sudden, he puts the car in reverse and backs it up kind of like where he came from. And now he's facing them. He puts it in drive and he's driving towards them. Now it's late. It's dark. But you can see a row of cars and obstacles that are they have no escape to the left. I can't remember if it was like blocked by brush or whatever. But to the right, you've got like a bunch of cars and stuff and a building. And this dude steps on the gas and he's coming at him. And they turn about face and they're like bamboozling. They're like running, trying to outrun this car that's encroaching on them. And I'm thinking, man, these guys don't stand a chance. I'm thinking this car is going to like run these guys. It's like watching a pretty good movie with a pretty good action scene. You know, I'm thinking, man, there's no way these guys are going to get away. So they end up, they fire at the guy while he's revving his engine and he's coming at him. And they literally, their path was blocked. So it looks like they just made it to a break where the cars were parked at, where they're able to dive out of the way. and both officers fired their service weapons. And the bad guy crashes. At least he didn't crash into the police officer's car. He crashes into the deputy's car, the cruiser, and he's able to get out of the car, but he dies at the scene anyhow. So that's the way that ends. Commentary on that, gentlemen. We have 3 minutes and about 15 seconds. Travis Yates.
No, I mean, we see this constantly. And this is what I said when that Minneapolis shooting happened, is this is not unique. Every week there are people trying to drive towards officers or drive around officers or two officers. And we make a big deal about watching the video and going, okay, was the car angled directly at the officer? Or what was her intent? That's got nothing to do with it. What was the perception of the officers, right? Was there an imminent, was there an imminent threat towards the officers? And the people that are saying this have guaranteed have never had a vehicle drive close to you at all, right? It's happened to me. It's probably happened to everybody on this show. Most of the time, we're not firing our weapons, but there are times that has to occur. And so this is not going to be controversial because it's not happening in Minneapolis or the media doesn't care. But what we saw in Minneapolis is not unique whatsoever. It's just unfortunate that everybody lost their mind for it. You know, we have Sean Hess here on the show listening, who is so offended that these guys that we're talking about, these factual police issues. You need to take a breath, stop drinking so much coffee, don't watch NBC The View, and just look around and have a clear head about things. This is not unique. It's not controversial whatsoever. Unfortunately, there are people that try to kill us with their cars, amongst other things. And the only thing we have at our disposal is, unfortunately, a firearm.
And, you know, it's funny, though, Sean Hess, even though he thinks that no one listens to what we have to say or is interested, he's watching the show because that's not the first, that's not the only comment he's made. So interesting.
Yeah. Welcome to Offend the Audience Week here at Leo Roundtable. You know, there's two skills, three skills, really, that are important in these kind of events. One is firearms training. The other is the investigation, and the third is reporting, report writing, because this is a math issue. It's a physics issue. It's a human performance and physical capacity issue, perception. It's the science of it. You know, I hear from time to time, oh, all an officer has to do is to say, I'm scared. No, you have to have a reasonable and articulable fear that meets the definition of the justification for deadly force. And so that needs to get documented so that the people reviewing this, the prosecutors and potentially the judge and the jury, can look at this and recreate it in their mind. When you write a report, you've got to tell the story so that it implants itself in the brain, and in as much as possible, the hearer of the story experiences it as much as possible as the officer did. So I agree with Travis. I think this will be a, you know, no-brainer. I'm glad that the disposition of the prosecutor was the right call.
Excellent. Well, excellent commentary, guys. You know, it's funny that we've got Bill BC saying on Rumble, he had a 357 Taurus, a seven shot. How in the world, a 357 seven shot? Are you kidding me? I could think maybe a six shot. But have you ever heard of a 357, a seven shot? Do you know how big the cylinder would have to be on that sucker?
I've had a nine shot, but it was a 22. You got to have some wall space between those cylinders with a 357 load.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see the hands of the dude that carries that sucker. Maybe some dude the size of Travis Yates, probably, you know. But hey, gentlemen, thank you so much. Dr. Schultz, retired police chief, and also Dr. Travis Yates, retired police major from Tulsa. Thank you, gentlemen, for being on the show. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org, Lieutenant Randy's 501c3, helping cops out in the world of hurt. And also want to mention our sponsors. We have Gallus.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, Gunlearn.com, Medicare.life, SafeguardRecruiting.com, and TwoBells.com. Thanks for watching the show. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.